How do you revive a brand that has lost its appeal? I asked Charles Basil, the first ever chief brand officer of the BBC. He was previously the CMO of Absolut Vodka, and he's credited as the person who revived Absolut Vodka in South Africa after a decade-long decline. We talk about how a brand can embed itself in culture so that it becomes a key part of that culture rather than appropriating it. For more current, future-looking brand advertising and marketing insights, stay tuned and hit subscribe. This is The Lead Creative. Welcome to The Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Mongezi Mthathi. Enjoy the show, and please share and subscribe. Charles, looking back at your career, what advice would you give a marketer who's starting out today, feeling very uncertain, not knowing where the industry is going?
Yeah. So how's it, Mongezi? It's really nice to be with you, man.
Must also be great to be able to say how's it to someone who gets it, hey?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, that's funny. How's it? It's funny, you know. Before I answer your question, I just a little anecdote, because I think you'll appreciate this. Mm. I spent 5.5 years in Sweden before moving to the UK, looking after Absolut Vodka.
Yeah.
And when I first arrived, I started by saying, how's it? And people were like, no, I'm fine, thank you. How are you? And I explained to them that the how's it is their version of a hey. Yeah. Hey. But and at the end of my time, when they gave me sort of an amazing farewell video, the entire organization went in that video was going, how's it, Charles? Beautiful. Like, it's just the most beautiful thing. Yeah, there's something very special about South Africa and the way we speak to one another. So, Mongezi, what would I say to somebody starting out in the industry? Firstly, I'd say back yourself, believe in yourself, arm yourself with the best education. Ask as many questions as you can, and try and connect with somebody that can be a mentor, that somebody that can guide you. And that's difficult, but often people are very willing to give up their time and their energy to help. You know, I think most people have been down this road, and are wanting to give back, I would say. And then finally, I'd say is it's a brilliant industry to get involved in. You know, it's about human beings, it's about creativity. Yeah. And it's about results, business results. And I think that combination of three things makes it a very compelling place to come and have a very enriching life experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Charles, you mentioned Absolut Vodka, and I want to go into that a little bit. From an outsider's perspective, it often seems as though brands with a global footprint, or global brands, as it were, make their marketing and creative decisions at their global HQ, and regional marketers tend to follow. That said, though, your work with Absolut Vodka had a significant influence leading to your global position and you shipping out of South Africa, right? How common is that? And what is it about that work that made such an impact globally?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. You know, I think you're right. A lot of global brands will create a core of that brand at the center. And that's the consistency piece. But I mean, brands are looking for freshness, and they're looking for distinctiveness that does come from regionalization or localization of that brand, you know, a way to really connect with consumers on a level that is meaningful for them, and particularly large brands that are fatigued. And Absolut was a fatigued brand at the time, and was looking for growth in new geographies and in new ways. So, you know, there is that sort of, if a brand's starting out, it's looking for high growth, looking for brands for growth with new consumers. If a brand's been around for a while and is being quite successful, it'll be more of the same. But typically with large brands that are stagnant, they are looking to places like Africa, to Latin America, to Asia for new growth. And you know, what we were doing in South Africa was we were really trying to tap into kind of the consumer mindset, but also the zeitgeist of the country. So if you go back, what was it, the 2017, 2016, Absolut was basically a small brand in South Africa. You know, it had all of the legacy and the iconicity that it has all over the world, but in terms of actual volumes, there were other brands that were doing much, much more significant volume. And so in effect, it was a relaunch of Absolut, not only for South Africa, but into the continent. And I worked with an incredible team of people. You know, Melanie Campbell was our head of marketing for White Spirits. Jason Zanopoulos was heading up VML at the time. And it was that collaboration between smart people who have a desire to do something creative, understanding the market. Our insights team really had a handle of kind of where consumer sentiment was. And what was quite interesting is if brands have a purpose and can actually deliver against that purpose in a way that's stylish, that's relevant, that's fun, it really kind of hits the mark. So what was going on in South Africa? There was sort of prevalent xenophobia to immigrants coming in from north of the border. There was a sense that you know, kind of a sense of optimism that that was going to change, a sense that brands had a role to bring people together. And also, there was a desire to kind of really showcase the creativity of the continent. So those three things kind of happening at the same time. And if we sort of get into kind of what was happening globally, the Absolut was talking about one source vodka. All of Absolut is produced in a little village called Aarhus in the south of Sweden, using locally sourced wheat, and it's you know exported to the world. So one source vodka, and the idea actually came that if the source of all of Absolut is Aarhus, the source of all mankind is Africa, the continent of Africa. And if we understand that it's only through kind of coming together that feeling, that spirit of Africa is brought to life, we wanted to bring that to the fore in a very Afro-optimistic way. And the zeitgeist was also, you know, Black Panther had been released, this whole idea of Wakanda, this feeling of kind of Afrofuturism was really just emerging. So we tapped into that in a way that brought Afrofuturistic style, music, and the idea was let's find a local hip hop artist who was using the vernacular, whose career was kind of stagnant at the time, but who you know had the potential to do some amazing things. And we went to work with Kudi China, and we reached out to him and said, "What do you think?" And he loved the idea, and came and co-created this idea of collaborating with musicians from other African countries, from Nigeria, from Kenya, from Rwanda, from Angola, and this idea of kind of we're all from the same source. And the whole idea was this sort of standing up against xenophobia, but doing it in a way that was culturally positive, collaboration, work,
And I think
creating
relevant as well. I think, I mean, at the time, there was also a lot of talk around what has now become a hot topic, this idea of cultural relevance among brands and not being, and almost, you know, not denigrating culture or taking from culture to build a consumer brand. And that has since been the case. You mentioned this idea of collaboration as well, with you know, with your agency partners and with other partners within the business internally, other stakeholders. What are some of the key elements that need to align for a brand that had lost its sort of relevance in the market? I mean, from my understanding, it had been almost there had been a decade of decline for Absolut Vodka at the time that you took on the brand and you went in this direction, that you know it became part of the zeitgeist, as you put it. What things needed to align at the time for that to happen?
Look, I think there's a couple of things. So to your point, Kuli China, One Source Vodka, One Source of All Mankind. We dropped an album and it went to number one on the Apple Music charts. And I think that was that the CEO for Absolut globally contacted me and said, "Look, we'd like you to bring the spirit of Africa to the world. So this notion of kind of bringing energy and creative spirit is so critical to drive growth in a brand. And it requires somebody like Anna Malmacher, who invited me to Stockholm, and to take a risk. You know, I was this guy from South Africa. It was a brand that was built in the US, a Swedish brand, but bringing a South African in to bring that spirit of Africa to the globe, I think required a little bit of bravery. So the first thing is bravery. The second thing is you can't do everything on your own, and collaborating with smart people, creative people. One of my mentors actually said to me, if you want to surround yourself, if you want to be successful, surround yourself with people that are better than you. And I have to say that's always been my philosophy. So really smart people, really creative people. And then collaborating with people of culture, in our case in South Africa with Kuli, and then with artists around the continent. But, you know, with Absolute, it's a rich legacy of partnering with artists, fashion designers, musicians. And so that really bringing the brand back into culture. But I think you've said it there really well. It's not about appropriating that culture for commercial value. It's actually being a part of the culture and adding some value. In the relationship with Kuli, we actually helped him relaunch his career in a way. And, you know, that's something I'm very proud of, because he's an amazing guy, amazing artist. But the same thing can be said on a global level. If we were partnering with anybody, there had to be a value exchange that wasn't purely transactional, wasn't purely about money. It was about relationship, about partnership, and about benefiting both the brand and the individual or the event. So we partnered with Tomorrowland, for instance, which is, you know, the world's largest live electronic music festival in Belgium. And there, it wasn't just about giving them money and coming to sell Absolute. We actually created a limited edition Absolute bottle that commemorates that Tomorrowland festival that year. And every year it's a new design that incorporates the Tomorrowland imagery with the Absolute iconography. And that is just, I think it's critical to a brand success to be partnering rather than being in transactional mode.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show. Now, you mentioned a couple of things there that I want to pick up on. And I think to me, one of the, I suppose the core of it is this counterintuitive clash sometimes between a big creative idea and this data-driven thinking that we sometimes have in marketing, right? Because you mentioned that all the signals in culture were saying at the time that culture is moving towards a certain direction. You know, Black Panther had just launched. There was this idea of people almost appreciating themselves, appreciating culture. But as a marketer, I'm not sure. I don't think data would have told you that. No. I don't think the data at the time would have told you that. And yet, you know, so it's almost as if you went against the grain in terms of what data would have told you, and then coming up with this creative idea. How do you balance that? How do you toe that sort of fine line and balance the two things?
Oh, you know, I think I'm going to quote a guy, Henry Ford. He said, if I listened only to what the consumer wanted, I would have given them a bigger horse, you know, or a faster horse. The thing is, the data is really useful to understand what is and what's been. It's very hard to predict what's coming. And defining the future, you've got to take some risks. You've got to trust your gut. And you've got to trust the people who understand zeitgeist and understand culture better than you. And in that particular instance, if I think back to that moment in time when we partnered with Kuli and we created the One Source album, the prevailing approach to marketing vodka was, you know, very slick, very premium venues. It was a lot about men and women engaging, you know, in socializing in those environments. And I have to say, it was kind of, you know, it was working for the people that were doing it, because there was nothing to compete against that. And My sense was that this brand in particular, Absolut, had something much deeper than just being a vodka. It had partnered with the LGBT community since, in the 1980s. It had art and fashion as part of its history. We needed to do something that was culturally at the edge of at the cutting edge of culture. And so there was a real sense for me when the creative team came and presented the idea of producing a music album, that this was the right thing to do, because it was a fame moment for the brand. It was something that was true to the very core and DNA of the brand, and it had the potential to really tap into kind of what consumers were wanting and needing and looking for at that moment in time. But selling it into the organization wasn't easy. I remember having a proper argument in a meeting room, because the commercial value of doing something like that isn't immediately apparent. If I do a promotion, I see the returns on my on in terms of sales on that promotion immediately. This is more of a gamble. And credit to the people in the room after the argument, after the debate, because they could see the real belief from the team in this idea, and that and by the way, that was backed up by an insights team that spoke to both the zeitgeist and what consumer needs were, because you've got to back it up somehow. They were willing to take a risk, but they said that, I remember the brief was very simple: give this a go, and if it doesn't work, we're going back to plan to the old way of doing things. And fortunately, it was a massive success. I mean, it created a stir, created talkability. I mean, people talk about that being a necessary part of brand building today. But go back 10 years or longer, that idea of kind of creating talkability, that idea of kind of creating social buzz, really did lead to commercial success. I think the other part of it, by the way, Mongezi, was the way you bring it through the line. And I think, so it's one thing kind of creating the album, creating the event, creating the partnership, and creating the whole design around it. But we actually limited, we I'm sorry, we launched limited edition bottles with Kulichana on the bottles. We had messaging that went onto the shelf of stores. We created promotions where consumers could win access to events, free music. They had the opportunity to meet Cooley. So you bring it down through the line onto the shelf, into the bar, into the grocery store where people are transacting. And so it's, I think big ideas like that, if they live only in a world that we want them to live in, they sometimes get a little bit lost in terms of the commercialization of that idea. So they have to be brought down to some of the nuts and bolts in store. And when you're thinking about big ideas like that, bringing them through the line becomes an important part of the sell into an organization, but also in terms of turning that into commercial value.
Now, in a time when marketers are faced with, I suppose, the challenge of, shrinking budgets, a lack of budgets here and there, and also this sort of persistent thing of looking for the short-term results, because you mentioned that you had these arguments with the team, and part of it is there is this short-termism that we kind of have in marketing, or at least marketing faces with the business. How then do you come up or ensure that your creative campaigns or campaigns meet both the short term and also the long term brand equity things that business is looking for?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's probably the most poignant question you can ask, because it's one I think that all businesses are grappling with. I'm at the BBC now, and it's the same question. Usage, getting people to view your programs in the next quarter, are going to drive your perception of success, to be honest. But if you're doing that without thinking about long-term sustained growth, you, as I said, I actually said this to somebody a couple of days ago in a meeting. Like 3 days ago in a meeting, I said, the problem with chasing the short-term numbers only is that your future self is really not going to like you, because you're going to have to work harder to do the same thing in a year's time, in 2 years' time. And so, I think any CEO worth their salt, any leader of a business or entrepreneur worth their salt understands that it's the both and. And for us as marketers, I think the big shift over the last 20 years has been that marketers have gone from being delivering communications that build brand to actually thinking about businesses more holistically and understanding that brand building requires the communications that build brand, the promotions or the activations that drive transaction, and ultimately supporting both the long and the short term in the way that we're thinking. And I think that credibility that a lot of marketers have earned, and the use of data, to your point, becomes an important way to ensure that you're balancing both the future and the short term. I think that's critical. It's critical to be able to deliver the numbers today while building for the future. And so this idea of brand equity and sales figures or sales in the short term, in the media world, at the BBC, we're talking about, viewership in the short term, but also brand power in the longer term. And it becomes a really, really important balancing act. And funny enough, in terms of budgets, the way to show it is actually by piloting programs. There's an idea on the table. Let's try this. Let's put a small budget behind it. Let's look at what the impact's going to be. And then using that data to say, look, this is the investment we've made. This is the impact that it's had. You get businesses to buy in and give you more money to go and do more of the same. So I would say, just sort of as a tip, it's use that piloting mentality to go and try things, and to sometimes they'll fail, but oftentimes they'll work, and that does engender credibility and also confidence to give more investment into. And I think it's important, like the budget has to be seen as an investment in your brand rather than as a cost center. In marketing, you're investing in the brand.
This episode is sponsored by the digitally led customer experience agency, Roger Wilco. For all your customer experience, digital marketing, and web development needs, go to rogerwilco.co.za or rogerwilco.co.uk. You can also download the South African CX Report and the Township CX Report directly from their website, free of charge. Don't we all love something free every now and again, especially with insights, right? Now back to the show. Now, as you lead the BBC into this, digital first future that we're now experiencing and growing, especially within sort of news and entertainment, which has become an immensely competitive space. And I mean, we know of really big brands in that space that have also that are no more, and we keep losing some of these brands. How do you then ensure that you keep the brand relevant in such a fast-moving, fast-paced, technology-first space of media consumption?
Honestly, if I had the answer, I'd give it to you. If I had the answer, I'd probably be a very wealthy guy. Yes, some of the things that I think we're thinking about, which is what's so interesting for me is that the world of consumer goods and the world of media are not that dissimilar. They're actually quite, you're trying to meet somebody's needs. I mean, everything we do in business, whether it's media or services or banking or FMCG, we're actually in service of our customer, our consumer, our audience. I think that's the sort of value exchange. We give them what they need and they give us something. Either it's money, in the case of the BBC, it's through a license fee, but Absolute, it was the sale of a bottle. And in order to do that, you have to understand what those needs are, and those needs are changing. They're changing quite fast in the space of media, but they're changing everywhere. So, if I go back to the original conversation we're having about those consumer insights and Zeitgeist, understanding what needs are, I think using data to track those needs and to understand where your audience is in this case is really important. But then to provide content and information and entertainment that's relevant, that's on point, is the product. That's just as important. So understand what they want, give them what they want, give it to them where they want it, and give it to them when they want it, in terms on demand versus broadcast are, are components of what we're thinking about and what we're doing. And then this notion of short-term and long-term views is, as I said earlier on, is as true for media as it is for anywhere else. Are you building a product? And in this case, are you building the platforms that meet the audience where they are? So now you'll get BBC iPlayer on your cell phone, on your laptop. It's not just the name says British Broadcasting Corporation, but it's not just broadcasting. We are already developing the technology and matching and exceeding actually our competitors. So I'll give you an example. Today, BBC iPlayer is growing faster than Netflix in the UK. I mean,
it's phenomenal.
It is. I mean, that is something I think that the organization is really proud of. My job is also to look at kind of what the long-term impact of everything that's happening will be on the brand itself, and to ensure that we have a vision for what the brand stands for and what the roles of that brand will be in society and for consumers. Because the thing about public broadcasting that's a little bit different to other streamers is that we also have a societal role. And so the brand has to be very, very clear about what its mission and what its purpose is. And for us as the BBC, there's three roles. I mean, they're quite simple. Telling the truth with no agenda, and that's about building trust with consumers. A lot of the news outlets are taking a perspective, a point of view. They're either, this direction or that direction. Trying to balance perspectives and being impartial is not that easy, but that's important for building trust. The second one is really kind of focusing, when it comes to entertainment, on homegrown storytelling, homegrown talent. For the BBC, that's looking at it from a UK perspective. So building creativity, talent, and they've done this for years. So there's a lot of credibility there, building talent through the system. I mean, I think there's something like every pound that gets spent on the BBC, they're giving back something like £5.30 to the UK creative economy. So there's something profound in that. And then finally, it's about creating a sense of belonging. And, the thing about media generally is it's becoming much more fragmented, as we know. Certainly a lot of the content we're getting is on social media, YouTube, whatever it might be. It's very personalized. I'm watching what that algorithm is giving to me. From a BBC brand perspective, the opportunity to give you what you want, but also to give you what society needs, and bring people together around, big moments, whether it's, in our case, Eurovision or the Euros or the World Cup, but really bring a nation together around those moments, I think it's an important societal role. But it's also what, by the way, if you look at zeitgeist, people like you and I are looking for belonging in a world that's more and more fragmented. Yeah. We really need to feel like we belong and that we're part of something bigger than ourselves. So those three things make the focus. So that's what we've now distilled over the last year or so, and we've kind of said, okay, that's really where we want to focus as a brand. It really does then help you to balance, coming back to your earlier question, balance the longer-term objectives of an organization and brand with the short-term usage and platform development that is more about kind of meeting audiences where they are and in the way that they want to consume content.
Yeah, Mark. Mark Whitson refers to it as that both is it, bothism, I think.
I like that.
Something
else. When I was at South African Breweries, they always used to say both and. We want both and.
So one of the key things to, I suppose, this sort of brand success and this success of campaigns and marketing is the agency brand partnerships that you're able to establish, right?
Absolutely.
So when you're in South Africa with Absolut Vodka, you mentioned that ecosystem with internal stakeholders and VML. When you moved to Sweden, that you would have had to establish a similar ecosystem to then make it global so that it's almost repeatable across other markets.
Yeah.
And now at the BBC, how do you establish that and how do you maintain those brand agency partnerships, because they are core to what you do?
Yeah, 100%. Like, honestly, if there's a relationship, it's probably the most important relationship for any marketer, is the ability to take business strategy and translate that into a creative and emotional campaign idea, big idea, that connects with consumers and audiences in order to change behavior. I mean, if you think about it that way, you are, this is all about behavioral psychology. And the only way to do that is through creative ideas that have an impact. So it is the most important relationship. It has to be, I mean, the word partnership is probably the sort of key to the answer. It has to be a partnership. It has to be about sharing vision, sharing strategy, bringing people in to conversations early on rather than later. And I would say one of sort of the keys, one of the things that was really lucky for us, or maybe deliberately crafted that way, is that by giving the agencies that we worked with in South Africa or in Sweden or now in the UK, it's giving them a place at the table as equal partners and really listening to them means that they're kind of coming in with ideas that are going to push you and make you feel uncomfortable, and just sit with that discomfort and then sort of challenge them on the strategy or on the outcome, and then they feel uncomfortable. But that mutual respect and love for one another is what kind of leads to really, really great work. And then another component of it is, if you're going to have smaller agencies across different areas, whether it's public relations and communications, and maybe it's through the, below the line work, it's important that they feel like they're part of the same team. So really bringing agencies together, and not just briefing, definitely bring everyone around the table when you're briefing, but also find ways to bring that group of people together in a social environment to celebrate your togetherness, your teamwork. For me, partnership isn't just a word that you use to kind of whip people into shape and to then say, no, but we're partners. Partnership is real. Partnership is in the good and the bad times.
Charles, we usually have a question that we ask our guests to leave for our next guest, and I couldn't have planned this better.
Yeah.
Our last guest was the head of marketing for Volkswagen South Africa, Bridget Harper.
I know her so well. She's lovely.
And the question she left for you was, how do you harness South African creativity to get the business results that you desire? Because according to her, we've got so much special talent in this country that's unique to South Africa.
Yeah.
So how do you harness that uniquely South African creativity to drive a business result?
Uniquely South African creativity is so deeply embedded in the uniquely South African energy and positivity of our wonderful... I mean, I'm sitting in the rain in England and I'm wish I was back home, because it's not just the creativity comes from a optimism and a hopefulness that presses through the most difficult of circumstances. And I think any business faced with challenges, and every business does, by the way, like this notion that it's just an easy ride is, kind of misplaced. Every business will be faced with a challenge. Every human being is faced with a challenge. But if we harness the unique part of who we are as South Africans, which is optimistic, hopeful, having belief that the future will be better than the past, then the creativity that comes from that is going to drive to a result that is going to improve the business. Because we see past the challenge, we see through the clouds to the other side of what it could be. I think for me, that's what it is. And it's the thing that keeps me going, by the way, because when Anna asked, when the CEO of Absolut Company asked me to come and be the CMO for Absolut Vodka, and she said to me, can you bring that magic of Africa? What I took with me is there's something about South African excellence that needs to be exported to the world to make the world a better place. And it's something I actually go, when I've gone from Joburg to Cape Town, Cape Town to Stockholm, and Stockholm now to London, I feel like it's the thing I want to bring into the room, this thing of bringing energy through creativity into the world. So South African creative excellence doesn't only change South Africa, it actually has the potential to change beyond the boundaries. I sat in a meeting yesterday with the BBC and we were talking about the general mood in the UK, which, is pretty somber at the moment, considering cost of living. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for people to be circumspect. And I spoke about kind of the BBC's role in actually bringing positive energy into this society. And, you know, having, you know, being the South African in the room and being able to say that, I think was a little bit of a relief for the people around the table, because I think people believe that and they want to believe that, but actually having somebody else looking at the situation and going, you know, we can actually be a protagonist for joy in the society, and that's our role. And so coming back to South African creativity, I think we just, it's full of joy. It's full of joy. It's just, I get a smile on my face, man. We started with How's It? And you've left me with a smile on my face now. It's just the most beautiful, beautiful energy.
What is the one question that you'd ask our next guest about their work, their creative process, their thoughts on the industry, or perhaps life for that matter?
Yeah. I guess my question would be, when you're faced with headwinds, when you're faced with the challenges that will present themselves, what do you do yourself personally to keep yourself motivated, to keep yourself positive, and to pick yourself when you get knocked down?
Amazing question. Amazing question. And lastly, if you could ask one question to any living person in the world, what would that question be? And who would that person be?
Does the person have to be living, you say?
Yeah.
You know, so Yaz, the thing, this is a bit emotional for me, but my mom has dementia. So I'm unable to communicate with her in the way that I used to before the disease. And I would love to ask her what her favorite memory was of us as a family. That would be my question. Like I'd love to hear that from her again, you know?
That's beautiful.
Yeah. I'm getting a bit teary as I think about it, yeah.
No, it is. It's a profound question, in fact. Something that we might take for granted when thinking of our parents and thinking of just life in general, you know? Yeah. And it's a question that I suppose your kids would ask you today while you're creating these memories, because you've created some and you're living through them.
I think we spoke at the beginning when Ella came into the room and interrupted us, and I asked you if you've got kids. So how many kids do you have, Mongezi?
One.
How old?
He's a 3 month old.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's amazing. It is the most profound part of our journey on this planet, is bringing children into the world. And my mother always said to me, actually, as she was getting older and we knew that this was coming, this dementia, she said, you know, I said, I don't know what I'm going to do when you're not around. She said, the thing about life is you need to turn your attention to your children, because that's what gives you optimism and hope for the future. And having children is the most profound part of our journey. For those that can't have kids or chose not to, there are other things, I know, so it's not taking away from anybody, but it is profound. So I wish you much joy in that relationship.
Thank you.
And some sleep at this point in that relationship.
Thank you so much for making the time. This was a great conversation. I'm sure a lot of us and a lot of our viewers and listeners will benefit greatly from this.
It's just a pleasure, man. It's so nice to connect with you. Really, thanks for the invitation.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.